Okay, let's sing this, and then Brother Chris will lead us in a prayer, and then Brother Alan will be talking to us about Esther and bringing back Amateur Hour. We're so grateful, Brother, you've come our way. Really appreciate you and your lessons, and just looking forward to a great day together to talk about what we can do to spread the gospel to others. So let's sing out.
Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom, brother, in the morning bright and fair? Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom, brother, in the heat of the noonday's glare? For the harvest time is coming on, and the reaper's work will soon be done. Will your sheaves be many? Will you garner many for the gathering at the harvest home? Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom, brother, in the still and solemn night? Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom, brother, for a harvest pure and white? For the harvest time is coming on, and the reaper's work will soon be done. Will your sheaves be many? Will you garner many for the gathering at the harvest home? Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom, brother, all along the fertile way? Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom, brother, you must reap at the last great day? For the harvest time is coming on, and the reaper's work will soon be done. Will your sheaves be many? Will you garner any for the gathering at the harvest home?
Brother Chris?
Let's pray. God, our Heavenly Father, we thank you for another beautiful day that you've given us all to live and to be here. And you've blessed us so richly, Lord, and we're so thankful to you. God, please be with us this day and be with Brother Alan as he brings a message to us that, Lord, may we apply it to our lives and not only just be better Christians ourselves, but be able to go out there into this world and to gather many of those sheaves for you, to encourage others to follow the words of Christ and to be Christians and disciples for your Son. Lord, be with us, guide us, and watch over us at this time. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. We'll start in Mark chapter 16. I was wondering if Mark was sending me a message. I sing that song. Sometimes I wonder about the lyrics. Are you sowing the seed of the king, dumb brother? You know? There was a preacher in his office studying about evangelism, and he had been studying for hours, and he thought, I just need to go put this in practice. So he went down stairs, out of his building, down the street, and he saw a man by himself, and he walked up to him and said, are you a Christian? And the man looked up at him and said, mind your own business. And the preacher said, this is my business. You know, that is the business of every Christian. Jesus gave us our marching orders. There are 29 words found in Mark 16, 15 and 16. Go ye into all the world. Go ye into Flatwoods, Kentucky. Go ye into Memphis, Tennessee. Go ye into Jacksonville, Alabama. Go ye into every place. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. That's every person that I see when I go through the line at Walmart, when I pump my gas at the station, when I pick up my kids at school, when I walk into the break room at work, into all the world. Preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. That's why Jesus came, that people could be saved. And that they might avoid the last part. shall be saved. Preach the gospel to every creature. Either believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Either believeth not shall be damned or shall be condemned. And that's a destiny that God does not desire for any person. 1 Timothy 2:5, he wants all to come to knowledge of the truth. 2 Peter 3:9, he wants none to perish. And he allowed his son to perish that men might not perish. Now, when you look into Mark 16:15, there's one word I would call to our attention. Preach the gospel. G-O-S-P-E-L. So that word begins with go. Go into the world. Go across the street. Go to the visitors. Go to the children. Go to the nursing home. Go. And then it ends with E-L. I suppose that could stand for everlasting life. That is the purpose of salvation. So go, everlasting life, and between those two are the two letters S-P. What might S-P stand for? What about some person? Isn't it the case that some person led you to Christ? It might have been your mother. And your father. Might have been a spouse. Could have been a friend. Somebody, maybe a stranger that knocked on your door. But some person brought the gospel to Flatwoods, Kentucky. Some person brought the gospel to your house, your home. And then we pay it forward by doing the same thing to another home, to another family, to another city. Some person. Now, evangelism is like fishing. In fact, Jesus uses that figure, making his disciples fishers of men, Matthew 4:18 and 19. There are some people that are really good at it. Fishing. Is there somebody in this church that if you needed a fish fry, we're going to have a fish fry you'd talk to? And say, can you catch us some fish? And they would be able to catch fish. So there are some people who are really good at it. But anybody can do it. There's not a person in here that can't go fishing. Not a person in here that can't bait a hook and throw it in and catch fish. Now some people are better at it than others, but everybody can do it. Evangelism is like that. There are some people, because of their background, their training, their personality, their Bible knowledge, they're really good at it. But anybody can do it. Because, as we'll see in this lesson, we have made it too hard. I'm using that blanket statement, and that may or may not be true in this case, but I suppose it probably is. Because we have made evangelism a specialty in the church. We've made it something that the preacher does. We've made it something that maybe a few people in the church can do. And we pay them or we expect them to do these things, but it's not something everybody does. Evangelism is, we have a youth program, we have a widows program, we have an evangelism program, and not everybody's involved in all, except that's not the way God set it up. God set it up that everybody is involved in the evangelism program. Now, you don't have to be involved in every work of the church. Some things are age-specific or interest-specific. Some things are optional. But evangelism isn't one of those things. Evangelism is an every member occupation. Now, there are a number of verses that I'll just spit these out pretty quick. There's six verses because this is not our primary focus. But I do want to lay the groundwork for the questions we're about to ask. And if we have time, we'll look at four questions. But each one has multiple parts, so we may spread this out a little bit more. Jesus began his work on earth with these words. These are the first words in the Bible that are in red if you have a red letter Bible. It's Luke 2:49, where Jesus said, I must be about my Father's business. Must there is a modal verb. A modal verb connects to another verb, and it indicates necessity or obligation. I must be about my Father's business. Jesus came to the earth, and he felt a divine compulsion to do his Father's business. And that's the example that he set for us, because he came to seek and to save that which was lost, Luke 19:10. So that was the divine compulsion, was to seek and save lost people. And since we put our feet in his prints, 1 Peter 2:21 and 22, his prints lead us to the lost. His prints lead us to share what he came to give away. Now, another passage. Matthew 26:22. This is in the Last Supper, and Jesus had just revealed these startling words. One of you is going to betray me. And they went around the room, Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Now, I preached a gospel meeting some time ago in Middle Georgia. It actually wasn't a gospel meeting, it was a class on the book of Daniel. And we met, a whole quarter jammed into one weekend. So it was pretty intense. Friday night, all day Saturday, Sunday. And one of the elders took me out for, I guess it was supper Sunday after the last session. I was sort of brain dead by that point. 14 sessions in 3 days, I think it was. He's a medical doctor. I saw him not too long ago. He's retired, but he's a medical doctor, a successful man, an intelligent guy. And his wife and I, just the three of us, were talking. And he said something that has resonated in my mind ever since. Now, this congregation is small. In fact, he said, we're at the point where every man has to participate in every service. Somebody's got to lead a prayer, lead singing, preach. Everybody, we just have that many men to take those. So that's where they are. And he said, this is what he said. I don't want the church to go down on my watch. And I travel a lot now. So I'm not in local work. I see a lot of churches. And if I ask them before I go, what's the attendance running? They'll almost always give me two numbers. Well, before COVID, we were running about. But now we have about. Churches have a lot of churches have lost members. Well, I said all that to bring us back to Matthew 26:22. If the church isn't where it used to be, isn't where I want it to be, isn't where it should be, Lord, is it I? Now, it's easy to point the finger at the elders and say, well, the elders should do something. Or it's easy to point the finger at the preacher, wherever he used to be. I think he spilled his coffee on himself or something. He's so worked up. I mean, this is exciting stuff. Welcome back. It's easy to point the finger at the preacher and say, well, he needs to do something, But really, is that right? Maybe I need to point that finger back at me. Lord, is it I? All right. First Corinthians, there's a lot of verses on this. I'll just give you maybe Esther, I love this passage, these two passages in Esther. Esther 1, 14 and 16, where Mordecai comes to Esther and she's been promoted to be queen, and you know the Jews are about to be wiped out. And Mordecai says, you're going to have to do something. You're going to talk to the king. And then he uses these famous words. Who knows but whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Who knows whether you're in the kingdom right here, right now, for such a time as this? You may disagree with this statement, and you might be right, but I believe that God puts people where he needs them in life through his providence. Not making us do it, but just God orchestrates it. You may not agree with that, and that'd be okay. But it seems to me that God does make it possible for people to do what needs to be done for the advancement of the kingdom in local situations. And to carry that to another application, he also, if there's a person who wants the gospel, who would obey the gospel, and God knows that, it seems to me that God can make that possible. In fact, John 6:16 seems to indicate that to me. If they will to do the will of the Father, they shall know of the doctrine. How's he going to get that to them? Maybe it's through television. It might be through a track in the pickup in a bathroom. It might be through their mailbox from house to house. It might be through a radio program. But it also might be with the face of a friend or a family member that says, have you ever thought about, or would you come with me? Would you like to? So here are our questions. There are four questions. First question is, and I really don't know. This whole series used to be one sermon, and then it just sort of grew into what it is. So this one is growing pretty fast into more than one session. So I built a little bit of cushion into our topics. So if we don't finish all of that I intended to finish under this heading, we'll finish it in the morning at the worship hour. The first question is this. How involved am I willing to get? How involved am I willing to get? Each one of these is going to have multiple points underneath it. Let's just remind ourselves of what some scriptures say to us. 2 Peter 1, 5-8, the beginning and the ending of the Christian virtues, idea of faith, virtue, and all that, says, and giving diligence. And then when you go down to the end of it, he sums it up by saying, diligence. So, we are to be diligent about our Christianity. We are to be diligent about the work of the church. Now, our vocation, which we normally use to mean what we do to earn a living, is really Christianity. And our advocation, which is generally used for a hobby or a sideline, is really whatever we do to make a living. You know, what we're really all about is the Lord. And we do whatever we have to do to survive in this world just because we want to be able to do his work. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Abounding there means if you put a pot on the stove. I remember doing this with spaghetti. I'm not a cook, and I don't cook very often. And this is probably a good thing, but I put spaghetti on. And then, you know, I was busy doing something in the other room, and I hear this noise. I'm like, what is it? I forgot what I was doing, you know. And it was like, psst. What in the world is that? And I went in and yeah, the spaghetti was, you know, boiling over, and it was when it would hit the hot eye, it would make that spitting sound. And well, that's what this word means. Overflowing, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Not barely showing up, not, you know, an average amount, not judging by everybody else is about right, but abounding in the work of the Lord. So, So you got out of bed, got ready, got here by 9 o'clock in the morning. So I know that I'm talking to the cream of the crop of the congregation. But what I'm going to do now is go through first the levels of involvement in a congregation. And most of you are going to be toward the end of this list, maybe everybody. But I want to get the sort of the baseline, and then we're going to talk about the 12 stages or steps of evangelism. But really needs to really fit in the church first. So here are the 7 levels of involvement in the local church. One is AM services only. Sunday morning only. You know, I think I have made a mistake through the years as a preacher by really castigating that group. I believe that they're not where they need to be frank. They need to be involved in the church. They need to be attending all the services. But maybe the best way to get them to do that isn't to say, you know, Hebrews 10:25, and, you know, to really preach down to them and use them as a, well, we don't want to be Sunday morning only sitting in the pews with pew warmers. And, you know, maybe that's not the best way to bring them to greater service. I don't know. That's just a thought that I've had as I've matured over the years. But that's one level. And, you know, a person who is baptized and that's all they ever do is sit on the pew, but they're not going to be involved in evangelism. So that's not where we want to be. Second level, all services. You know, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Bible classes, Wednesday night, all services of the church, second level. That's better. Third level, all services plus social activities. So you have a fellowship, you have a monthly party for all those that had birthdays, or you have graduation banquet, you know, the social activities that churches do, nothing wrong with them, but they're not, generally we don't use them for evangelism, they're just for us. Fourth level. Each one of these builds on the previous one. So AM, all services, social, and then number 4, add to it, work activities. So somebody who would go to a fellowship meal, but they wouldn't participate on a visitation team. So that's the difference in these two levels. So I'm willing to do work for the church. I will be on a visitation team, make my visit. I will host a youth activity in my home. I will clean out the baptistry or mow the grass. I'll work for the church. So that's a level. The next level is all those things plus leadership or teaching. So the elders come to me and say, we'd like for you to work as a deacon. Well, how much time is that going to take? What do you have in mind? You know, or I'd love to. What can I do? I mean, you might ask that question and still say that, but accept the role of leadership or teacher. So whoever's in charge of getting the teachers for the classes comes and says, you sure would make a good teacher. We'd like to get you on the rotation. I don't know. We like to travel on weekends a lot. I'm not sure I'd be around enough to. Or it'd be an honor to get to teach. What grade, what age did you have in mind? So, how many is that?
Five.
That's 5. Level 6 is all of those, or at least a willingness. You might not be right now teaching, but you would be willing to. All of those plus organized evangelism. Now, I'm going to define organized evangelism like this. If somebody else does the planning and the organizing, then I'll help, such as bring a friend day. Well, I'll bring somebody with me. I wouldn't have brought them if we hadn't organized it, but because it's organized and we're having a special day, then I'll do that. Or we're going to go door knocking before our gospel meeting. Everybody come up at 10 a.m. on a Saturday, and so I'll show up and I'll go out door knocking. It's organized. The church is going out doing this. I want to. That's good. Then the highest level of involvement in the local church is all of those things, plus self-starting evangelism. Self-starting. Like, nobody has to remind me or set up something. It's just who I am. It's just I talk about the church to people. It's just I invite people to come with me. Seven levels of church involvement. Now, I will say this. It probably won't have as much application in here as it would tomorrow. But wherever I am on that list, wherever you are on that list, move up a level. You know? Get out of the comfort zone and move up. You know. Then let's talk about evangelism. Now, you're going to need to write this down, or just find your place on the list and do the next one, because there's 12 of them. And unless you're a genius, you can't remember 12 things at one time unless you study them. I got them in my head, but I wouldn't be able to hear them and remember them like 12 things in a row. I hope I got them in my head. We'll see.
We'll find out.
We will find out, because this is live and unrehearsed here. 12 levels of evangelism. And what I want us to see, I'll point this out now, and I hope I'll remember to say it again later. The first 9 of these, there's not a person in this room who can't do them. 9. Now, the last 3, more people can do than we think we can do. Well, let's just focus on the first 9 to start with. If everybody in the church is doing the first 9, the church is going to go, it's going to grow. Because all of these things contribute to an atmosphere, a greenhouse atmosphere. And that's what we're aiming for in a local congregation, is a greenhouse. What is a greenhouse? Well, a greenhouse has the ideal conditions for growth. So they have the temperature right, they have moisture, the wind is protection from wind and storms, there's a buffer. So you put a plant in there, and that plant just accelerates growth, and then it can be transplanted out into harsher surroundings later and will be able to survive or even thrive. But so what about a church? We want the church to be a greenhouse so that growth is easy. Growth is natural. Everything is in place for growth. This is one way to do that. So these 12 steps. number one, moral support level. Anybody can do this? I'm going to use a personal illustration, but I don't want you to say he's a good guy for this, okay? It's just the only illustration I know to tell you. So I love teaching preacher students. And now I'm to the point where they're out working. Ones that were in my classes, our classes, and now they're out preaching. This week, I've gotten text with pictures of 3 baptisms from former students. And this is one thing that I've tried to make an emphasis is, and I tell them when they're in class, I'm going to check up on you when you get out and see if you're doing Bible studies or not, and see how many baptisms. I want to know, because we all need a little push, you know, especially when we first get started. So one of the students went to a church, and they had hired him before he finished school. And so we were talking. I said, well, how's the church doing? And he said, well, it's really growing. And I said, well, they're having a lot of baptisms. He said, no, they haven't baptized anybody in 4 years. They were growing because they were a sound church in an area where the churches were not. They were leaving the paths of righteousness. So they were growing in that sense. He's been there for since graduation was Father's Day, June, or whatever that is. He's baptized 3. So they've had 3 baptisms in 3 months or 5 months before they hadn't had any baptism. Just one person. I say that to say moral support. Another student, he's got baptisms, going to baptize a guy named Gary this week, and he's got a Bible study tomorrow with Zach. And he texts me those names so I can be praying for them. But I want you to pray for Gary. He was baptized 2 days ago, and hopefully Zach will be baptized tomorrow, as they're far enough in the study, if not tomorrow, this next week. Well, what is that I described to you? How long does it take to send a text? How's your Bible study going? Or send a prayer emoji after he says, "We'll be praying for Gary and Zach. I got studies this week." So a time or two a day, send a representing a prayer. That's moral support. And sometimes they'll reach out and say, "They asked this question, and I don't really know what would you say about this?" So that's moral support. There's something to be said for that. To talk about it, to encourage it. Number two level. Greeting level. Now you might think, and I did at first, well, that's really not even, shouldn't even be on the list. Okay, let me ask you this. You ever been somewhere when you went in for the first time to a church and they weren't friendly? You're like, I'm persona non grata here. I don't know what I did, but boy, they don't like me. We were in, I won't tell you the state or the city, large city, Wednesday night. It was a graduation trip, so we were a long way from home for one of my children. Wednesday night, we found the congregation. We went, we got there right about the time it started, and the greeter greeted me, the guy assigned at the door. We went in and sat down. It was a good Bible class. The guy did a great job. And it seemed like a lively congregation. Comments and then there was a break between the Bible class and the devotional. And it seemed pretty long. Maybe just because I was feeling a little awkward, sitting there. But we were sitting not in the back. We were sitting like, six rows up or something. There were people on both sides. We sat there that whole 10 minutes. Nobody came up and said, "Glad to have you. What's your name? Where are you from? What?" They did not know that I was a preacher, a Christian. I could have been somebody from down the street that just walked in. And on the way out, if I hadn't have made somebody shake my hand, they wouldn't have. They didn't have. They weren't ready for evangelism in that church. So I can do greeting. So what I've got to do, and I don't think they were bad people. I think they were just enjoying each other's company. Because they were all talking during those breaks. And they were, they were enjoying. And that's great. That's an important part of Christianity. But do that later. Look around and see who's new there. And go over there and talk to them first. Your friends will be there after they're gone. The visitors are going to... You're going to get out pretty quick usually, especially if nobody talks to them. So make it the goal that when somebody visits the congregation, they leave saying, "That's the friendliest church I have ever been to. They just would not let me." The greeting should start in the parking lot.
A worship service is the most evangelistic opportunity you've got.
That's exactly right.
We have visitors here every Sunday.
Do you? No, it's so good. So make sure that they know how glad you are that they came and how much you want them to come back. that level any of us can do. So what we've said so far, say, yeah, I could do that. I'm going to keep going, another level. Prayer, the prayer level. This involves... making a prospect list that has actual names on it. Not, "I'm just praying that the church will grow and we'll have baptisms. Praying the kingdom will grow throughout the world." We should pray that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, let's just say, 10 names of people that I know the church has some influence with that aren't Christians yet. Maybe they're sitting in the pews. Maybe it's somebody I'm studying with, or I know that someone else is studying with, like Gary and Zach. So they go on the prayer list, and I pray. And the fun thing about that is you get to mark them off after they're converted. And did the person pray for them have any part in their conversion? Yes. Otherwise, we're saying prayer doesn't matter. But does prayer matter? Is prayer powerful? Well, sure it is. Would you rather somebody be praying for your spouse or your child to be converted? Or would it just not really matter if they did? Yeah, we want people praying, so it matters. So we get to participate in the salvation of souls just by having the opportunity and taking the opportunity to pray about them to God. Number next. The money level. 1 Corinthians 4:2, which talks about being good stewards. Now, what we're saying here is not, so I put my check or however I donate to the church on the Lord's Day as worship. That's not what we're talking about here. Whatever that amount is not what I'm talking about. We're giving that as part of worship. What I'm talking about is giving specifically toward evangelism in addition to my weekly contribution. Now, not everybody can afford to do that, but many of us can. We've got discretionary money. You know, if you wanted to go out to eat tomorrow after the service, you could afford to do that. You could take your family out. It might cost $75 or something, but you could swing that. Or you could go home and eat for $14. And then you got that. That's just the difference in that's discretionary money. So how could I invest my money in evangelism? Well, there are a lot of ways. One would be a missionary. If there's somebody, I don't know, the church here is involved in, what do we talk about?
Peru.
Yeah, so you've got opportunities that have already been vetted by your elders. So you know that they're worthy causes, they're sound in doctrine. So you could say, and I know many of you are doing this, supporting a student, you know, in Peru or somewhere.
Yeah.
Or what?
Thailand. Michael Moon in Thailand.
Oh, yeah, Thailand. that's what I'm talking about. That's the money level. Or it might be purchasing materials and putting them out at places. You know, we can personally do. We have individuals who are sending out house to house in their community that the church is not supporting out of treasury. They say, well, I really want my neighbors to get the gospel. I'll pay for it if the elders will let it put the church name on it. And the elders said, well, yeah, if you'll pay for it, we'll do that. So they write a check to send the gospel out, you know, 12 times a year, 6 times a year, some. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Investing the money God has given me in saving souls that are my responsibility. Number next, reporting level. Yeah, we're definitely going to have to go more than one session here. A reporting level. Now, anybody can do this. What is reporting level? So I go to work Monday morning. And it's coffee break time, so I walk in the break room, or we're standing around, you know, wherever we have conversations with coworkers, and I say, you know, I have been thinking about that sermon the preacher preached yesterday all morning. And he preached on, and you just say, whatever it was. Say, it was such an interesting sermon, it just got my wheels going. Well, you didn't ask them to believe that. You didn't ask for their anything except I'm just reporting. Or you can do this. You know, the church has got this thing going on this week where we're helping give bags to school children with school supplies. And I got to run by today in Walmart and pick up some stuff for that. And just reporting. Or you're talking to your mom on the phone, let's say, she's not a member. And you say, you know, you're just going through things like you talk about whatever. And but you work in the church into those conversations and people. It's like, well, you know, Barbara's the sweetest thing. She goes to church with me. She came by and gave me a gift card for my birthday. She didn't have to do that. Well, Mom's thinking, that Barbara's a nice lady. Or, so you just work in things like that, where you're just reporting acts of the church to people that aren't members that put a good face on the church. Anybody can do that. Now, here's something never do. Report the dirty laundry of the congregation, outside the congregation. And every church has some times that we go through, you know? The devil don't leave us alone. So there are going to be some times when there's a little dust up or there's some kind of challenge in the... Well, let's keep that in-house. Because we don't want to discourage anybody who ever... from ever thinking, well, I don't want to be a part of that church. Or I know about them. No, we only want them to see the good side of the church. And the church is perfect on the divine side. But on the human side, we're still growing and maturing. And there are things that we, you know, that's the way the New Testament church was in the New Testament. Corinth had some problems, but they were still the Lord's church. The next level is sharing. Sharing. I can see it from here. You got a track rack right there. Right? And I suppose there's probably more in another place. You know how much those tracks right there that I'm looking at are doing right now? Zero. Because they're on a shelf. Somebody wrote them. Somebody bought them. Somebody put them in a rack, right? But they don't really do any good until somebody takes a stack of them and puts them in their purse or their pocket, and then, or their car, and then whenever they go through their daily activities, well, here's the easiest way to do it. Just drop it somewhere. You know, you don't actually give it to somebody. You just put it on a park bench or a McDonald's table, or beside the sink in the restroom, you know, or we just put it out where somebody else can say, well, that looks like an interesting subject. And they take it home and they read it. You will never even know who that person was, probably. But you're sharing the gospel. That's just one way to do it. Share with a tract. You can also share, do you have a Facebook account? Most of us maybe spend more time than we probably would admit on Facebook or some other social media. That's okay. Everybody needs hobbies and keep up with people. There's good things we do there. You know that little button somewhere on that screen? It's got three little circles and two lines connecting them. You know that button? The share button. Let's say your congregation, I suppose most churches now live stream and archive the sermons and the services. Maybe it's Mother's Day and Mark has a good sermon on mothers. Your mom's not a member of the church, or your mother-in-law. And you get home and you're on Facebook and you hit the share button and link it to the, and send it. Say, Mom, this reminded me, or mother-in-law, whatever you call her. Hope it's something good. You know? Say, I heard this sermon yesterday. It was so good. It reminded me of you. And I thought you might enjoy hearing it. Now, it's not about it. That sermon isn't evangelistic per se, but what I'm doing is cultivating a field where I've now created an atmosphere where I share religious materials with someone. And it's probably, it is better normally, don't start with baptism. Start with some common ground to build a bridge. And so that's one thing about the philosophy of house to house. We've been talking about this internally this week as we think about the topics for next year. The philosophy behind house to house is not to have a featured article, a main article, every issue that is on the church doctrine. It's always in there. That's not always the featured article, because we're trying to build a bridge. So if someone reads an article and says, that's what the Bible says, I believe that's good. This is a good publication. Well, we're building a bridge. We're building connections so that when we teach them on something that they don't already believe, they're going to say, well, I'm going to think about that because I really like this paper. Or I really like what this church teaches. Well, that's sort of what we do also as we share individually. Or maybe you have a gospel meeting and there's a sermon. You say, man, this is the same thing we talked about with my friend, you know, last week. And say, I'm going to share that. And say, well, I've been thinking about what you said the other day, and the preacher just preached on it. And I was surprised, but I thought you might enjoy hearing this. Now, the reason sharing works, especially initially, is because it's non-threatening. It's not looking at somebody across the table and they feel like, you won't know if they listen to the sermon. You know, it's like a tract. You give it, and then they may throw it away, or they may read it, but you don't know, so it's not threatening from their perspective. The next, I'm going to finish this list. We can move our break back a little bit. Sharing the next issue, was it number 7?
Yeah.
Introducing. Business world calls this connecting. Let me describe what it is. I'll tell you why first. The more people in a local church that a non-member knows, the more comfortable they will be in coming to visit. If you are the only person that they know in this church, let me tell you what's going to happen, what may happen. You invite them to come, and they sit on your pew, and then you've got responsibilities. You know, you're serving on the Lord's table this month, so you got to get up and leave them on their pew while you go, or you got to go up and lead the prayer, or you get called over because of something you're in charge of, and they're like, you know, you don't want that. You want them to come in and say, oh, I know you. I went to school with you. Oh, we've talked. You know, so the more people they know, the better off we are. So there are different ways to do that. We used to have a community meal once a quarter where it was called community meal, but not everybody was invited in the community. The elders got up and said, we want every member to come and bring somebody with you who's not a member of the church. Some family member, some friend, some co-worker. And we want to meet the people in your life. Well, that's one way to do it, because people will come to a free meal that won't come to church services, you know, and it's not in the buildings in the fellowship hall. Well, we got to meet a lot of people, and then they would feel more comfortable. We would normally time it before a church event, like a gospel meeting, and while they were there eating, and it was a good menu. I mean, we'd have a fish fry, or we'd do, you know, something that, ice cream supper, you know, something that people say, well, that sounds good. And then we say, by the way, our gospel meeting is starting Sunday, and we've got a flyer at the table or a brochure for everybody. You feel free to take that home, and you're invited. We'd love to have you come back, and we'll have fellowship meals during the gospel meeting also, and you're welcome to come to those. So you're sort of setting the stage for, you know, something better. But here's a way to share it individually. I mean, to introduce them to other members. Let's say you're building a deck on the back of your house and your skill saw tears up. You're almost done. You're like, I don't want to have to go buy a skill saw. I just bought all these boards. You know, you say, oh yeah, my buddy from work, he'd let me borrow his skill saw. So you text him. So my skill saw broke. Could I borrow yours? I got like 4 more boards to cut. Yeah, come on, get it. So you go buy. Or he brings it to work the next day, whatever. And then you do that, and it sits in your garage for a week or two, and you see it, and it's like, I got to get that back to him. But you think, let's say it's a Saturday. So you call up or text one of the elders or some friend in the church. You say, you busy? No, not really. Would you like to make a visit with me? Sure. Swing by and pick me up. So you swing by and pick him up. And maybe you go by and check on a widow on the way or the way back. And then you go to your buddy's house. And you pull up in the driveway, and he's out mowing the grass. So you wave him down, and he rides over there, cuts it off, flaps his brow and says, hey, what's up? He said, well, I just brought your skill saw back. Oh, good. Well, just put it in the shop there. And he said, and you say, oh, by the way, I want to introduce you to somebody. This is, you know, whoever. And whoever gets out of the truck and walks around and says, shakes hands. And he says, now tell me your name. Well, Garner, you wouldn't be related to, you know how conversations go, right? Well, yeah, that's my son. You're kidding. Well, I work with him. Oh, do you work out? Yeah. So then they got a 10-minute conversation. They got a connection. So the next time you invite your friend to come to services, he knows another person there. And he had a favorable impression of the church because of that member. There's a lot of ways to do that, but that's one way to do it. So the next level. Inviting. Now, you would have thought this would be the first one on the list, wouldn't you? But inviting is pretty far down the list of evangelistic activities that we can be involved in. But this one, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag here. I'm debating on whether to do this now or not, but I'm going to do it. The two most important things I'll say all weekend, the two things that a church must do in order to grow. Everybody invite somebody every Sunday. And make the worship service top notch. We'll talk about that tonight. Those two things are the most important things that we're saying all weekend. Now, there are a lot of other things that are important and that are more directly involved in saving a soul. But as far as the whole members being involved, these two things. Invitation. So, is there anybody in your family that won't be here tomorrow that might come if you said, would you like to come? Or would you come? Could I pick you up? Or is there anybody in a circle? Maybe it's too abrupt for tomorrow. But somebody you work with, somebody that's a neighbor, somebody that you talk to. Well, boy, I'm just so excited about church. I've been inviting everybody I know. Would you like to come see? You know, something positive like that? Now, there's one person. I got a couple stories. I'll just tell you this one. One person was converted after a long time living beside a Christian. And when eventually she came to services and then they got a Bible study and then she was baptized. But she told her at the baptism, did you know that you invited me 39 times before I came? But she had no idea. You know, it's just who she was. It's inviting. But her neighbor knew. What if she'd only invited her 38 times? Right? And what if she had said, well, she's not coming. I invited her a dozen times already. Well, a dozen times just getting started. So, invitations. Number 9 is setting up a study. Setting up a study. You know the problems preachers often have? We move into a community. Now, Mark's been here 14 years, so it's probably not so true now. But when you first move somewhere, everybody you know is a Christian. You know, because they, you know, the people in the church. So the probably your best soul winner generally is the preacher, and he has the least number of prospects to study with. So he needs somebody to set up his studies and say to their friends, you know, we got this new preacher, and I just really love him. And he's doing community Bible studies every week. And he's asking us to help him to set these up, community Bible studies. Would you like to be in one? Well, yeah, that sounds interesting. I've been wanting to know more about the Bible. So you host it at your house, or it could be at the church building, it could be at Mark's house. It doesn't really matter, or the person's house. And then you sit in on the study. You don't have to do anything except sit there and look pretty, you know? Or sit there and help them find the page in the Bible. Or if their kid's fussing, go in there in the other room and play with the kids so they're not distracted from what's being taught. That's what evangelists call silent partners. You're just there, but you're not the teacher. So set it up and be a silent partner. Next one is be a Bible study teacher. Bible study teacher. So in other words, you take the place of Mark in that scenario. Now this is where most people think evangelism starts. Oh, I gotta know how to sit down at a table and teach somebody the gospel, what verses to use, and what if they ask me a question I don't know, and how far down the list are we? Number 10. This is number 10. This is what I said. Everybody can do the first 9, and most people can do the next 3, but even if you can't do number 10 yet, or even ever, there's a lot to be done in evangelism. Now, there are ways, you know, you can, there are Bible studies. All you got to do is just connect the dots. You just read the verses, and they answer the questions. It's easy. Or watch a video, and it's easy to be a Bible teacher. And after you are a silent partner a few times, you're like, well, I could do this. And then Mark's out of town at polishing the pulpit or doing a gospel meeting somewhere, and there's a Bible study opportunity. He says, Nathan, would you take that Bible study with so-and-so this week? I'm going to be gone. Yeah. Number 11. Go on an annual mission trip. Go on an annual mission trip. I suppose the church here goes on mission trips as a congregation, but even if your congregation doesn't, there are hundreds of trips that our brethren take to all over the world every year. They're usually a week long. And so you say, well, I'll go. And you could talk to your elders and say, I'm going to go. And they say it's going to cost $2,000 for a plane ticket and the food there and lodging. Would the church be able to help with that? Or maybe you just say, that's part of my contribution to the Lord. I'm going to pay for the trip, and I'm going to go. I'm going to take my vacation to do it. Last level. Be a missionary. You talk to your spouse. You say, you know, maybe you've gone on these mission trips. Maybe to different places. So you say, we've got an opportunity to go replace the missionary that's there because they're coming home after 2 years or 4 years or whatever. Would you think, well, we could do? I got friends that have been in the mission field. They spent 5 years in Africa. They just talked about it and said, well, somebody needs to go. We can go. And the friend I'm thinking of, I'll see next week, he and his wife, they'll tell you those are the best years of their lives, those 5 years. And when they came back, they are the best supporters of missionaries you ever saw, you know, because they've been there. So be a missionary. All right, that's the first point. So we're going to pick up with that next hour, and we'll still work in everything that we had intended to say. Well, we'll take our break, and let's just come back. Would it be okay to come back at 10:15? Yeah. So we'll still take our break. We're just a little bit late.